This is a instructional tape on Democracy versus Republic, and just to give you a little bit of an introduction about myself, the speaker, I'm Keith Anderson, and I decided that I didn't like being a slave many years ago, and of course, when we start talking about slave and free terms, we want to try to understand what that means, you know. Free people own their labor, and they decide what they're going to do with it. Slaves have someone else deciding how their labor is going to be utilized. And there's other people making the determinations as to how much of your paycheck that they get and how much you get to keep. Whereas a free individual, they get everything, and then they decide how they're going to spend it after they get it. It's not taken out before they get it. So, based on those kind of considerations, I want you to just kind of consider whether or not you're a free individual or you're a slave, personally to yourself. And I'm not interested in pushing my definition off on anybody else, but do a little bit of introspection there to see what kind of a category you fit in. And I'm going to give you a personal definition of freedom. Freedom is the right to do anything that you want to do as long as you do not interfere with someone else's right to life, liberty, or property. In other words, if you're going to be going down the street, you say it. Say the speed limit is 55 miles an hour. There's nobody on the road, and it's safe. It's safe conditions. It's not raining and all that. Well, if you went 60 or 65 miles an hour, that would not be, you know, illegal, because number one, you're not endangering anyone. You're not hurting anyone else's right to life, liberty, and property. So therefore, there's no crime committed. But according, of course, to the rules of the road, there would be a crime, a commission of a crime here. And the question is, who's the injured party? Well, there's not one. And I just want you all to know I'm not professing that people go out there and be belligerent in the driving habits and speed and be reckless and all that just because no one else is around, because I'm not doing that. When we change who we serve, and we start doing things God's way instead of our own way, well, we start acting differently. We start acting more responsibly. We start caring about other people more. We start, traveling in a more safe and sane manner than the people who have driver's licenses and comply with all the rules and regulations. So we're more cautious, not less, and we're more responsible because we have to take care of whatever damages that we cause. Okay, freedom also contains the right to own property and utilize property in any way that we wish without, injuring someone else's right to life, liberty, and property. In other words, our choice as to whether or not we want to build on an addition to the house or not build it on, we do not have to go out and ask for permission from a government employee. We have a right to travel on privately owned automobiles that are not motor vehicles and do so freely without any interference, because it's our personal and private property. That's our right to utilize it and travel in it. We're not engaged in commercial regulation. And if you look real hard at the code, you're going to find out that the government only has the power to regulate those cars in commercial regulation. And we'll get into that more in the lecture, but just briefly, cars registered in commercial regulation would be motor vehicles registered with the Department of Motor Vehicles, which is an organization in interstate commerce, subject to the USDC regulatory powers. Anyway, prior to 1979, I was studying a lot in the scriptures, and that led me into, I saw something was wrong with the government. The government was acting outside of its bounds. So I started studying the Constitution of the United States of America and found out that they had very, very limited authority, and they had exceeded the bounds of those authorities. So I started statutory rules and regulations court cases, and I found out that there was no requirement of law. Oh, there's one other thing I found out before I get into that. I found out that the government had murdered over 30 million babies to date through federally funded abortion clinics. And since the Bible says, "Thou shalt not commit murder," I had to come to the conclusion that I could not support that criminal activity of murder. And I know there's going to be people that believe that you have a right to choose. Well, you do have a right to choose, and God is pro-choice. You have a right to choose to do things His way or your way. But we should all come to one agreement. Every one of us should come to the agreement that it is not government's place to take funds from all of us who want to support the mass murder or who do not want to support the mass murder. They don't have funds, the right to take funds from all of us and support the funding of those mass murders. If they want to go ahead, you know, people want to do those things, then they should do it at their own expense, with their own private counsels, whatever counselors they want or need to go through that kind of a thing, and go ahead and do that on their own. But they have no business asking for you and I to fund that mass murder. That is the individual's personal financial responsibility, not mine, not yours. And if we can come to an agreement on that, I think we'll have a unified front here. To put government back in its place, if people keep on demanding the government commit these evils and pay for them, then, of course, they're going to continue to do it. So everybody's got to stop asking government to do things that they have no authority constitutionally to do. That is not our supreme financier for everything that we want. We are. All we have to do is keep the funds and save them and then decide how we're going to utilize those funds on our own. Okay, so what I had done in finding out that they had been using these funds for criminal activity, I decided that I could not participate in that criminal activity. And I started studying. I wanted to be sure that I was complying with the law 100%. And I did not want to violate the law, so in studying the law, I found out that there was no requirement to file income tax returns or to pay the income tax. So for 3 years straight, I went to my accountant. And I told my accountant, I cannot find anywhere in the law where I'm required, a person required to file income tax returns or pay these income taxes. Can you show me in the law where I am required? Because if I am, I want to file those returns and I want to pay those taxes. And he looked at me and said, each of these 3 years, he says, I can find no law that requires anybody to file. I've been to the IRS meetings. They always tell me it's based on individual self-assessment and voluntary compliance. As a matter of fact, all the former Internal Revenue Service commissioners have always said it's based on individual self-assessment and voluntary compliance. In other words, there has been no law. So, how come we've had all these prosecutions in this country over this tax system? Well, you are a volunteer when you're going to get the Social Security number. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be a volunteer for the rest of your life. If you're able to go into these contractual relationships, you're able to come out of them. We're going to get into that later. So I went to the accountant for 3 years, and that's the story I got. He knew of no law. So I knew I had a lockdown on a win on the willfulness issue in the event that we went to a court hearing on it. And then, of course, I did an incredible amount of research. We went into the Westlaw Research Services, and we researched cases that pertained to taxpayers and non-taxpayers and found out that all the rules and regulations governing taxpayers had no application to non-taxpayers. And of course, the research shows that the Social Security number is the taxpayer's identification number. So when you get a Social Security number, you become identified as a taxpayer. Before that, you're identified as a non-taxpayer. Now, you seal your fate for the filing of returns when you file your first return, because they claim that you would not have filed the return unless you knew that you were required to file the return. And therefore, since you had required yourself to file, therefore, you're a person required to file. Now the only way that you can stop filing the returns is you want to cease to have income, remembering what the definition of income is, and I'm going to give that to you a little bit later. I don't want to give it all to you now. This is just kind of a summary before I get into the lecture. Anyway, I had laid the foundation, a good foundation, to fight this case before I was ever charged, and I was charged criminally with not filing income tax returns and not paying income tax in the state of California. And behind that came the Internal Revenue Service with a criminal investigation against me. Well, 3 months into my state case, the IRS dropped all criminal investigation. And then 1 year, 9 months into the state case, the state lost my entire file. It disappeared. And we had them beat on every ground because we had gotten a discovery with all of the state's administrative rules and regulations for the handling of these types of cases, and they had violated all those rules and regulations. Number two, I had the accountant backed up as a witness who would have testified, if that ever came about, to the effect that there was no requirement to file these returns. He had never seen one, that he had told me that, and the IRS always says it's based on individual self-assessment and voluntary compliance. Okay, so I got charged criminally, and And we had some incredible and wonderful things happen in the case. And the reason we did is because I believe the Lord was going there and fighting our battles for us. And while everybody else was being put in jail in these types of cases, we were able to come out victorious on this one. By and victorious, I mean that they lost the file, there was no conviction, and there was no incarceration, which I consider a victory. Now, they are not going to change this satanical evil system. And the reason they're not is they have to collect the revenues to pay for all these social welfare expenses that they have created. Therefore, they have to persecute the people that are in the system to pay for those people who are getting benefits from it. So you're not going to change it by court case, regardless of what the law says. And you're not going to change it even with common sense, logic, and reasoning processes, because they don't think that way. They think of how much they have to cover their expenses. So they become a monster, robbing people to pay other people not to go to work. And the solution is to stop going to them to ask for benefits, so they'll stop robbing people to pay for those demands upon the Treasury. I had some incredible and wonderful things happen in my case, that one of those things was I went into the court one day, and I says to the judge, I says, the defendant is present to answer to the criminal charge of having violated the second plank of the Communist Manifesto, the heavy progressive income tax. And the judge's jaw dropped open in astonishment and anger, and he turns to the prosecutor and says, aren't you going to object to this? Well, the prosecutor was looking at the crowd. We had the courtroom packed with our supporters. It was full. They were going down out the doorway. They were going down the hallway. They were filled in the courtyard. We had somewhere around 350 to 400 people that day in support of this case. So we did have incredible support to stop the criminal activities of government. And anyway, the prosecutor looked around the crowd and he looked up at the judge and he says to the judge, it sounds about right to me, Your Honor. And that is correct. The heavy progressive income tax is the second plank of the Communist Manifesto. And they have imposed every plank of the Communist Manifesto on the people in this country on a voluntary basis since 1933. So we have a kinder, gentler form of communism in this country than in other countries. We have voluntary communism. And the voluntary communism is threatened, is enforced through lies, threats, harassment, lying, stealing, cheating, coercion on the part of these governmental agencies to enforce the payment of these funds for the support of the social welfare programs. And they have to do that. They have to threaten, intimidate, harass you, and they have to do it for some very, very important specific reasons. So anyway, that's a little bit of my background. I have a college degree. I have an honorary doctorate degree in common law. And I worked hard for a very, very long period of time to obsessively, since 1978, to try to uncover what the problems were in my life that caused me to be a slave to a satanical, lying, stealing, cheating government. Imagine, you know, here we are, we're grown adults, these government employees are our servants, and you have a wet behind the ears, green, fresh out of school college kid coming around telling you what you can and cannot do in your business. It just doesn't make any sense that we have those people acting as a dictator over our lives as if they have some kind of a right or responsibility to tell us how to govern our lives and how to govern our personal affairs. Now, if there was a real problem, like, if you did injure someone else's right to life, liberty, and property, fine, the injured party has the right to go make a complaint. And you go to court and you settle that and you make a determination what the damages are or whether or not, you know, the injury really occurred. And if it didn't, you dismiss the case. And if you did, party who was injured gets restitution. There's very, very good ways and simple ways to reorganize this. People are always asking, well, fine, you have a better idea, tell us what it is. Well, there's a lot of better ideas in running a government without threats, intimidation, and harassment of the American people. That means we go back to courts of justice that employ justice through the means of common law courts, where there has to be an injured party before a claim can be recognized in the court, where a trial by jury is had, where the jury is the judge, and they determine all the facts and the law in the case and make a final binding decision on the case. So you can have justice and you can have freedom at the same time, but you cannot have a government that robs one sector of the society to pay for others not to go to work. They produce nothing of any value, therefore they don't have a right to give away something that is not theirs or to commit the crimes of robbery and theft and threats and intimidation and harassment in order to enforce a satanical lying, stealing, cheating program. They've got to be corrected on that. They've got to be changed because they are destroying the wealth of this country and putting everybody in debt through these insane programs. And the reason for that, they're totally irresponsible in the management of the funds. They do not put funds aside, you know, for your retirement and Social Security to collect interest and pay you back interest and principal at age 65. They don't do that. They spend every dime they have. And the elderly population is growing faster than what it ever has. And by the year 2010, it'll take approximately 1.5 people to support everyone on some kind of a government benefit program if it continues at the rate that it is now. And the only other solution they have is to continue to raise the taxes and decrease the benefits. And the question is how many people are going to stand for staying in the system when the benefits keep on going down and the price keeps on going up? It's bad enough as it is now, you know, trying to get something out of the government. And the reason for that is they're consuming over 70% of the Social Security and income so-called tax money that they receive just to administer those programs. Okay, now we're going to get into this lecture that I developed as a result of my studies. I started studying and teaching on the Constitution 1979 and the Internal Revenue Code and statutory rules and regulations, and I taught heavily all over California and surrounding states on those subject matters until about 1982 or so, and then I went to a lecture up in Northern California, and for the first time I laid out the lecture I'm going to give you now, and I laid it out without ever having studied it before. And all I can say is it had to come from the Lord, because it defines these two jurisdictions very, very well. And it shows you that you have a right to choose to be free. You don't have to be a slave. One is a slave jurisdiction, one is a free jurisdiction. I'm going to show you that you chose to be in the slave jurisdiction and that you have a right to choose to be in the free jurisdiction. So number one, in order to make a change in your life, you have to know where you're at. Number two, you have to know where you want to go. Number three, you have to have some kind of a plan to get from point A to point B in order to make that change. And I made that change in my life, and the way that I made that change in my life is I closed down everything associated with a Social Security number. I sold everything that was tied into the system. I cashed out of everything and restarted my entire life all over again, doing things right in freedom and free enterprise, and I have had a very, very free life since approximately 1979, and except, of course, for the court battles that I went through. But even then, you know, it was a wonderful blessing and a wonderful experience, because we got so much knowledge going through that court experience that we were able to totally redesign a system to help people get out of the system without any criminal prosecution, without any confrontation with the government. You're going to be able to close your doors down to them and never deal with them again for any reason if you wish to, and move into freedom and free enterprise without any confrontation, without any threat of criminal prosecution. So all that work that I spent and all that, you know, those years of going through that kind of a prosecution is going to benefit those people who decide that they want to make a change in their life and utilize that procedure without any downsides. Except, of course, the downsides that we are going to maybe, I wouldn't even call those downsides. They're not really downsides, but trials that we're going to go through in being a witness to other people that you can be free in America. And just to give you a hint about this, in the early 80s, the IRS reported about 30 million people not filing returns that they thought were required to file, and it's been reported in recent years that it's more like 45 million to date, and this is 1996. So we're on the upswing. You know, the movement in America towards a freedom and honest government is on the increase, and the movement to support the social welfare communistic programs of the current system are on the downtrend. And the reason for that is the system is going to go down because of its costliness. And if you go into the biblical tape and the back of the tape in Revelations, you'll see that the system will be destroyed because it's just too costly. They can't afford to pay for all the liabilities that they've incurred through promising people social welfare program payments. And let's be more honest with it. It's communistic welfare program payments. And if you have a Social Security card, you're in the category of a Social Security card carrying a member of the USDC Communist Party, because that is a, you know, they're all following the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, and that is pure communism. I know. Some people are going to object to that. They're going to feel upset about that. Well, I'm sorry, folks, but you can read the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto for yourself, and just do a little bit of study on that, and you'll see that what I'm teaching you is the truth. And we're going to bring that up a little bit later as we get into our segment on the Constitution. This lecture now is Democracy versus Republic. And what I'm doing is I'm just laying this out on a chart here. And as I do this, you might want to do the same. Just kind of take a piece of paper, draw a line down the center, and draw a line across the top, and put in Democracy versus Republic. This is a foundational series lecture, and we're going to be talking about five topics here, session one. We're going to get into Democracy versus Republic to learn the distinct differences and characteristics of these two jurisdictions, plus the characteristics of good slaves, disobedient slaves, and free sovereigns. We will learn and know the problem, and to discover that the conspiracy by the mere corporate government to overthrow our lawful constitutional government in America is real. We're going to talk about the nature and application of the income tax, how to lawfully avoid it, the nature and application of the Social Security tax, and how to lawfully avoid it. In session two, we're going to define jurisdiction. We're going to learn jurisdiction in a way you've never learned before. You'll be an authority on jurisdiction. We're going to define God's jurisdiction, the mere corporate government jurisdiction, individual jurisdiction, solution provided for changing jurisdictions, and contracts, employee-employer versus independent contractual relationships. In session three, we're going to do property ownership, learn how to buy, own, and control, purchase property, stop liens, levies, and seizures on owned properties. That includes automobiles, miscellaneous personal property, and real property. In session four, transition tools. We're going to learn how to use transition tools that interface with the system, allow you freedom without confrontation. That includes trust, common law rights to identification, free use of acquired property, use of business organizations that interface with the system and set you free. In other words, we teach people how to do this correctly. If you're eligible for the benefits, then you have an obligation to pay for them. So the key is not being eligible for the benefits. If you're not ready for being totally free from being under the government's authority and jurisdiction, then it's quite possible that you want to stay in the category of learning how to reorganize your affairs and reducing your taxes to the very lowest possible level so you can enjoy maximum freedom. Okay, now starting with the Democracy versus Republic presentation, we're going to define these two different jurisdictions. And first of all, I want you to repeat with me the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, let's repeat that. And as we do that, we're going to write down significant characteristics of that pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. So we're going to, like on the Republic side, we're going to put United States of America, and to the Republic, and put a check mark by Republic, because this is the form of government we're supposed to have. We're supposed to have a Republican form of government, not a democracy. So to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God. So we're going to put God to the right of Republic at the top, because we are to be one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty, right, liberty, and justice for all. So liberty and justice belong there as characteristics of the constitutional Republican form of government. Now, we are not talking about the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. That's not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about two forms of government, and the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are the same form of government called democracy. We want to talk about a Republican form of government, which is an opposite form of government to the democracy. Democracy is based on the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, whereas a Republican form of government is based on ultimate freedom for we the people of the United States of America. And I want to solidify this just a little bit now with the Declaration of Independence that our founding fathers gave us. As you recall, they overthrew a government, a foreign governmental power. They threw them out of this country so they could establish this country as a free nation for we the people of the United States of America. Here's the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's guide entitles them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Okay, so let's write unalienable rights on the right-hand side. That's UNALIENABLE. And if you recall in the school systems, you were taught that this was inalienable rights. Now, what does that mean to you? It didn't mean anything to me, but unalienable rights is very important to me. It's unalienable rights means rights that cannot be lien. These are rights that we got from God that no one can take away from us. Okay, so we're endowed with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life. So write down the word life. Liberty, we already have that written down. And the pursuit of happiness, so write down happiness. So these are some of the rights we got from God according to our founding fathers' Declaration of Independence. Now, whether you agree with that or not, that's not important. What I want to do is I want to give you some foundational aspects of how this country was formed from documents by the people who formed it, so that you'll understand the method by which it was established. Whether you agree with it or not is not important. Just look at the foundational aspects of it so you can see how we have a consistency of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in this country as free people and not as slaves. And the only way we can regain it is by reinstituting these principles. Okay, now we have that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Okay, so where does government get their power from? They get them from we the people, the United States of America. They derive their power from we the people. They have no power except those powers we gave them. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, okay, what ends are they talking about? They're talking about the ends of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So when governments interfere with our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we have a right to do what? It says it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. That's what our founding fathers did. They threw the King of Great Britain and his troops out of this country. They overthrew that government under which they lived to establish this as a free nation. And remember, it's Great Britain. It wasn't Russia. It wasn't China. It was Great Britain that they overthrew. And if you look very, very closely at the Federal Reserve System that is in control of our financial systems today, you'll find that its connections goes back once again to Great Britain. And I'll get into more of that later. Now, when we're talking about we have certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we're talking about, this is just some of them here. This Declaration of Independence doesn't give them all. So we're saying we got God-given rights. We got rights from our Creator. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we have a whole host of them from the floor to the ceiling. We have a right to own our labor, to contract out our labor in any way we please as long as we're not injuring someone else's right to life, liberty, and property. We have a right to free travel without any interference by any kind of a government employee, hireling, servant. We have a right to do that. And unless they have some kind of a warrant for our arrest, that's based on probable cause, in other words, a sworn complaint by an injured party that we injured them, they have no right to interfere with our free rights of travel and association. They don't have the right to govern that. Now, to make it clear, I am not advocating the overthrow of any government. That is not what I'm advocating. I am advocating a correction to remove governmental programs that are unconstitutional from being exercised by our government employee hireling servants. You have to get them out of a position of robbing one sector of the economy to pay for another sector not to go to work. Because if you are the robber, sooner or later you're going to be the robbee. Let's look at it this way. The government robs one person to pay for another person not to go to work. Well, that puts people out of business. It puts people out of their homes. It puts people out of a livelihood. That means taxes have to go up because they're not paying taxes anymore. And there's bankruptcies to set in to create loss in the financial industries. So we have substantial financial losses with that kind of a system. And the people that are left in the system supporting it have to pay more and more taxes, and it's going to bankrupt them as well, which means that if you are the robber, you sooner or later you're going to be the robbee. They're going to rob you as well. You're going to be in that category, and you have to come to the realization that that's just a fact of life. So all I'm advocating is the correction of government to get out of affairs that are our business. In other words, stay in their own backyard, stay in their jurisdiction. We have a jurisdiction of the right to function in our jurisdiction without their interference. They have a jurisdiction which is constitutional, contractual law, and they have a right to be in that jurisdiction, and they don't have any business interfering in ours. So they stay in their backyard, we stay in our backyard. Now we're going to have a happy family of governmental actions that's going to build a strong America again. Put everybody back to work. Prudence indeed will dictate the government's long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for the future security. So here is the authority that our founding fathers gave us to correct this government. I'm not advocating the overthrow of it, I'm advocating the correction of it. Get them out of your backyard. If you simply cease being eligible for the benefits, they have no authority in the future to interfere in your backyard. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. Okay, now, when the governmental power is being enforced through the Internal Revenue Service with threats, intimidation, harassment, and the absolute confiscation of people's property without any due process of law in the courts whatsoever, is that a tyranny? Well, yes, it is. That's the definition of a tyranny. So, and by the way, for those of you that are unfamiliar with this, this is a fact of life. The IRS does have the power to manufacture liens, levies, and seizures and confiscates people's properties without any due process of law in the courts, no trials by jury. And there's a reason for that, and I get into it later. But the point is, that is an absolute tyranny, and it's unchecked by probable cause, by court hearings to establish the laws and facts in the matter to determine whether or not the IRS's position is correct or incorrect. And we have a right as a free country to have fair and impartial trials by jury on these issues before property is taken away from us, and that's not being respected in this country, and it has got to be changed. Government has to be corrected, and we have to correct it, because they're not going to. Okay, now we're going to look at some of the complaints that the Founding Fathers made about the King of Great Britain to see, how that applies in our current lives. On page number 28, and by the way, this Citizens' Rule Book will be available to those people that request it, that I'm reading out of. And it has the Declaration of Independence under the Constitution and some other legal points and authorities that you might be interested in. Okay, he, that means the King of Great Britain, has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount of payment of their salaries. And that's why we have a dependent judiciary now, is because of that simple fact. The judges are really employees of the state now, and they're not serving the people, so they're perpetuating the position of the state rather than defending the sovereign rights of the people. He has erected a multitude of new officers and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Well, that's happening in America with the excessive taxes. Incidentally, when they came in with the income tax for the corporations in 1913, they said it would never reach more than a percent. It was 0.5% then, and it would never be more than 1%. And of course, we are seeing taxation up now to 30 and 40 and 50% plus Social Security tax. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislature, and that's occurring now. The government is prohibited from doing that in the Constitution of the United States of America. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretend legislation. Well, there's a criminal conspiracy with a foreign financial power called the Federal Reserve to enslave us financially with a national bank, and that would apply in that category. Okay, now, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. Over in Seattle, Washington, not very long ago, we had a white officer shoot and kill a black man who was, hadn't committed any crime. He was not seen in the commission of a crime, and he was just running away to get away from the officer. He didn't want to be hassled by the officer, and the officer shot and killed him. So they had a special hearing for that officer. He was not charged criminally. He was not taken to a trial by jury, and he was not given an appropriate punishment. What they did is they had a mock hearing for him and determined that he didn't mean to do it. Therefore, he did not have to stand trial for murder. So this is in the same category. They're protecting their people, their law enforcement officers, from trials by jury by mock hearings to determine that they didn't mean to do it, so now they don't have to stand trial for a murder. Now, if these were private citizens that got involved in this, the loser would have gone to prison and may have been executed for the murder. Okay, now onward. For imposing taxes on us without our consent. Now, of course, that's occurring today. They're just deciding how much they need in revenues, and they're raising the taxes on a regular basis, and they're not asking for the people's permission to do that. For depriving us, in many cases, of the benefits of trial by jury. Now, I'm going to make an astonishing statement now that all trials by jury in America have been abolished. There are no current trials by jury, and many of you are going to be saying that I'm crazier than a loony bird, because you've been down the courtrooms and you see a trial going on there. So I'm going to make the statement again. There are no trials by jury in this country. They've all been abolished. What you're seeing there is you're seeing a mock trial by jury. Now, what are you saying when you're saying, I demand a trial by jury? What you're saying is, I want the jury to be my judge. When you say, I want the jury to be my judge, you're saying, I want the jury to decide all of the issues of law in this case and decide all the facts and make a final binding decision. What they're doing in the courtroom is that they're swearing the people in that they will accept the law as dictated to them by the judge. In other words, they have no free right whatsoever to determine what the law is. They are bound by oath to accept it as dictated by the judge. This leaves the determination of what the law means totally 100% in the hands of the judge, which we cannot trust because they're working for the state. And remember, we the people are to be a correction on illegal and criminal governmental activity, and we're to do that through the jury system. So here's some points and authorities on jury rights. The jury has a right to judge both the law as well as the fact in controversy. John Jay, First Chief Justice, U.S. Supreme Court, 1789. The jury has a right to determine both the law and the facts. Samuel Chase, U.S. Supreme Court Justice, 1796, signer of the Unanimous Declaration. The jury has a power to bring a verdict in the teeth of both law and fact. Oliver Wendell Holmes, U.S. Supreme Court Justice, 1902. The law itself is on trial quite as much as the cause which is to be decided. Harlan F. Stone, 12th Chief Justice, U.S. Supreme Court, 1941. The pages of history shine on instances of the jury's exercise of its prerogative to disregard instructions of the judge. U.S. v. Dougherty, 473, Federal 2nd, 1113, 1139, 1972. So here's some very, very important court cases that show that there is a fourth branch of government. We all have been taught about the executive, the judicial branch of government, and the legislative branch of government, but they have not been taught about the sovereign powers of we the people of the United States of America as a fourth branch of government to nullify all the illegal and criminal activities of the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of government so that they cannot exceed the constitutional and jurisdictional bounds of their jurisdiction. So when we demand trials by jury, the judge is to be the referee, and the jury has the right and the power to determine the law and the facts in the case and make a final binding decision. Now, what's really happening is that when issues of facts are coming up that do not support the state's position, the prosecution, routinely they are dismissing the jury from the courtroom. They're discussing those issues. They're not allowing the jury to hear those issues. Then they bring the jury back and they continue on with the case. So they have a jury that's not allowed to determine the law, not allowed to hear all the facts, making final binding decisions on whether or not a person is innocent or guilty. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want to be in that situation. I have to hear, and I have a right to hear all the facts and law. Otherwise, the person is innocent. The person is not guilty unless we have a trial by jury where the jury is empowered to hear everything and make those final decisions. That means that lawfully, constitutionally speaking, no one that is in prison today in the United States of America themselves, and by the way, we have more per capita in jail in America today than any other country of the world because they have made it a prison industry, and none of those people are incarcerated lawfully because they did not have a lawfully constituted trial by jury. Now, in order to correct that, we have to start going back, you know, demanding trials by jury, and any time a judge makes us take an oath that we're going to accept the laws dictated by him, any time they excuse us from the courtroom and bring us back, that means that we have not heard all the facts, and you have to come out with a verdict of innocent just for one reason. Trials by jury are not being enforced in the courtrooms in America today. And until they are enforced, no one can be found guilty, no one can be incarcerated under those types of conditions. Now, obviously, you know, a lot of those people that are charged are going to be guilty. And that may be a miscarriage of justice in that people who are guilty may not, go to prison where they belong. But that also means that a lot of innocent people are going to be going to prison as well. And, of course, the injury to freedom is so reprehensible that it's more important to correct the reprehensible nature of the destruction of freedom than it is the other way. Now, it won't take long, you know, everybody going in the courtroom and at a trials by jury, saying not guilty based on the issues that I have discussed with you, before the courts are going to wake up and realize that they cannot get by with violation of the constitutional requirements of a trial by jury any longer. This correction will put the power back in the hands of we the people to nullify all laws that are passed by the legislative branches of government and approved by the executive branch of government and enforced by the judicial branch of government. It'll put it back in our power to nullify it through the jury system, to strike those laws off the books that are repugnant to the Constitution of the United States of America, and hold those people accountable that attempt to enforce those laws as valid when they are unconstitutional. And that's the biggest problem we have today. Now, I want you to understand the Constitution in the correct aspect that it was written, because a lot of people are claiming to have constitutional rights. Well, we've read the Declaration of Independence where it says that we get our rights from God. Government, employee, hireling, servants do not give us any rights. What the Constitution is, it's a contractual agreement whereby we agree to hire government employee hireling servants to serve us in specified duties and responsibilities, and we define those duties and responsibilities in the Constitution of the United States of America, and we agree to pay them for their services. As it is a contractual relationship, and their violation of the Constitution is a breach of contract. Therefore, it's extremely vital that we read, know, and understand what the constitutional provisions are, what the restrictions are on government employees, so we can hold them accountable to the law that we had them to enter into to uphold as the supreme law of the land. Here are some points and authorities on that issue. All laws which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Marbury v. Madison, 5 U.S. 2nd Cranch, 137, 174, 176, 1803. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Miranda v. Arizona, 384 U.S., 436, page 491. Now that means is if they pass all kinds of legislation in these legislative assemblies that are unconstitutional, you can totally ignore them. They cannot pass any kind of legislation that would abrogate constitutional protections and guarantees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, now, an unconstitutional act is not law. It confers no rights, it imposes no duties, affords no protection, it creates no office, it is in legal contemplation as inoperative as though it had never been passed. Norton v. Shelby County, 118 U.S., 425, page 442. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment, and not merely from the date of the decision so branding it. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. That's 16 American Jurisprudence, 2nd, section 177 and 256. So, it's extremely vital that we know and understand our constitutional law that binds down government employees in this contractual relationship for them to serve us. Because we have all of our rights from God, and the only ones that we gave up were to hire government employees. We gave them specific duties and responsibilities that we would pay them to do. And it's our responsibility to hold them to it. Now, here's a summary of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto to give you an idea of how communism is working in America through the Emergency Powers Acts of 1933 by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Number one, abolition of private property. Now, the question is do you own private property? And if so, is that the property that you have to go to the government to get permission to do something with? Two, heavy progressive income tax. Do we have that in America? Three, abolition of all rights of inheritance. Does the government control that? Four, confiscation of property of all immigrants and rebels. Do they have the power to do that? Five, central bank. Do we have a central bank called the Federal Reserve, a foreign financial power? Six, government control of communication and transportation. Do they do that? Seven, government ownership of factories and agriculture. Are they involved in that? Eight, government control of labor. Do they do that? Nine, corporate farms, regional planning. Do they do that? 10, government control of education. Do they do that? Well, if your answer is yes to these 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, you'll be pleased to know that the government employees that you hired to protect your rights to life, liberty, property, and freedom are imposing every plank of the Communist Manifesto on a voluntary basis. As a prelude to discussion of constitutional provisions, which is a contract to bind down government employees from illegal and extracurricular activities, we want to look at the Bill of Rights, Article 10, where it says, the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, or reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. That means we only gave the government duties and responsibilities in the Constitution. They have no other rights to do anything else. Everything else is within the people's jurisdiction. It's under the jurisdictional authority and power of we, the people of the United States of America. That is not their power, that's our power. It's not their jurisdiction, that's our jurisdiction. And there's ways you can waive that jurisdictional authority and power, and I'm going to show you how you lost it. I'm going to show you how to regain it as we get into the Constitution. First of all, I want to draw out a little bit more on the chart on the Democracy versus Republic program here. And we're going to go, we're going to discuss the law of creation. And the rule of law of creation is that the created always owes a servitude to the creator, because the created enjoys life because of the benevolence of the creator. So we have the Republic versus Democracy chart, and over to the right of Republic we have God at the top. So God is the creator of the people, so you just draw an arrow down to the people. And therefore, since God created the people owe their servitude to God. Now we take the people and realize that government came as a result of the people creating it. Government did not create people. People created government. So draw a line down from people where it says, and write in there, state government. And write state government with a capital G for government, because this is the proper government that was formed constitutionally by the founding fathers to function in the United States of America. We were to be the sovereign power over the government. And we had the power through the jury system to nullify anything the government does that is unconstitutional. Therefore, the powers to control government employees were retained in we the people of the United States of America. Now, down from state government, draw a line down to national government. And do that with a capital G as well. Okay, now that puts the government in this country in the proper perspective. National government was the least powerful of all governments, controlled by the state government, by the people. And the state government was over the national government and a servant of the people, and the people rule over the state and the national government, and largely enforce that through the power in the jury system to nullify anything that they do that is contrary to the Constitution. That's why they have sabotaged the jury system and controlled the juries to prevent the juries from abolishing unconstitutional laws. As a matter of fact, if you are selected for jury duties nowadays, one of the questions they'll ask people in a lot of these cases is, have you read and do you understand the Constitution of the United States of America or the state? And if you answer yes, you'll be dismissed from the jury. They will not, they don't want anybody that has any knowledge as to the constitutional law on the jury nullifying their illegal and criminal activities. Okay, now, rule of law being that you owe your servitude to whoever you receive your benefits from, since the people created the state government owes its servitude to the people, so just draw an arrow from the state government up to the people, and because the state government and the people created the national government, then the national government owes its servitude to the state and to the people. Okay, so now there's your chain of command, and we have the way to correct it, any kind of a misuse of that system through the jury system. That's why it's so absolutely necessary that the jury starts saying not guilty in any case where they're denied to decide the law and where they're denied to hear all the facts. Anytime that occurs, that means it's not a trial by jury. That means it has to be a not guilty verdict until judges back off on trials by jury, start being the referee that they were designed to be, and cease being a perverter of justice by sabotaging the jury and making it, turning it into a mock trial by jury rather than a trial by jury. It's very confusing, you know, to us when we see these jury trials going on and we still think we have liberty when we actually don't, because they're controlling all those juries behind the scenes. So you just have to look at it from a different perspective, how it's supposed to work as opposed to how it is working. And I think you'll start realizing, like I did, that the operation of governmental systems today is upside down. So if you just look at everything that maybe should be backwards the way that they're doing it, you'll probably find out that that would be the correct way to do it. Okay, now, the most important aspect in any kind of a governmental system is the control of the money. So any constitutional Republican form of government, how is money created and how does it work? Well, the first foundational aspect for that is Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque, reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin, a tender in payment of debts. Pass any law of bill of attainder, correction, that was pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. So we see here that there's a specific restriction on government where the states cannot make anything but gold and silver coin, a tender payment of debts. That means the lawful money of account that we have to have in this state to circulate as money is gold and silver, because we cannot pay any debt unless we're paying it in gold and silver coin. And the states were prohibited from coining money because that power was given to the national government to coin the money for the states. And the reason that they did that is because they wanted the money to be uniform throughout all the states. If the states all coined their own money, there would be different sizes and shapes for each and every state. And they wanted a standard of weights and measures so that would not have to be a exchange ratio between each of the states of the United States of America. So the constitutional laws of the United States of America still require that gold and silver coin is the only lawful money. And the Founding Fathers did that for a very important and specific reason. They started printing what was called a continental, a worthless paper currency, and they printed so many of them at the outset of the establishment of this country that they created wild inflation, and the inflation just about ravaged the country and almost destroyed their government at the outset. So therefore, when the Constitution was formed, they put on there the restriction that no state can make anything but gold and silver coin, a lawful payment of debt. And that was the standard of money in this country, except for a couple of times when that was perverted and misused, and that up until 1913 when they brought in the Federal Reserve Act to take over control of the financial systems through a foreign financial power and counterfeit our money and pass it into the economy in order to rob this nation of its gold and silver. So, historically speaking, constitutional speaking, gold and silver coin is the lawful money. And most people will say, well, is there enough gold and silver to go around? Well, of course there's enough gold and silver to go around. That's why they call Yellowstone National Park Yellowstone. There's so much gold there that it's incredible. But there's plenty of gold, and the reason for that is whatever the amount of gold is, if gold and silver is the lawful money of account, what's going to happen is the value of everything will be evaluated based on that particular you know, supply of wealth called gold and silver in the exchange process. So even if you did have a limited supply of gold, not what you'd consider not having enough, you would still have plenty because goods would just go up to match a limited supply of gold, or prices would go down to match a higher supply of gold and silver. And the point is that this is the supreme law of the land. In other words, you people out there that say, well, we have to obey the law, we have to do whatever the law says, and so forth and so on, okay, I'm reading you the law. Now, if you believe in obeying the law, well, this is what the law says. Gold and silver coins are the only lawful money. We have an obligation to force our government employees to come back to lawful money of account.